Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condor, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
It's Mr. Ben Errington.
Just had to remember my second name then. How's it going?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly going.
Is it?
How's it going? Yeah. It's going. It's gone. What's going? Time. Our lives are slipping through our fingers.
Are they?
Yeah, decades gone, years gone. It's all happening.
Where does time go?
Down the pan.
Down the pan.
Down the pan. Yeah, down the pan. We'll be doing another decade list before you know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so this is the podcast. What did we do last week? We did the decade list, now we're into a new decade. Let's start off with a film from last decade. Right.
Yeah. That's the best way to do it.
For all that, have you seen any news? News from across the
just the news at 10
world?
Yeah. No, to be fair, a lot of the news that I usually take into myself, I mean, it's probably not a good thing, but a lot of the news I usually peruse is stuff about Jews. It's the only word I can think of to rhyme with that. Yeah. Interesting choice of word, yeah. It's usually, you know, film, game, music related, unless it makes me laugh. So all that bloody serious stuff on the news, World War III. Ah, come on, give me a good meme. Give me a good meme that talks about our impending doom. I can get on board with that.
You said nihilistic memes.
Love a good nihilistic meme, don't you? Yeah. One that really makes you think, yeah.
Yeah.
Some
friends sent me this meme, this GIF, whatever, however you pronounce it, that I can't get out of my mind. And it's a guy who, okay, how am I going to describe this? So a guy is going to the toilet, he unzips it, and it's like a camera phone pointing down at his the toilet. He unzips his pants, pulls out his penis, and then the whole penis falls off and goes into the toilet.
Well, that's the gif, is it?
Yeah, it's just really short, but whenever you go to the toilet, you can't stop thinking it's going to fall off.
What would you do if that happened? Would you just flush?
Would you dip your hand in?
I'd go, see you later. Give me enough trouble. Oh, well, this again.
Do? Yeah, yeah. Again.
Goodbye.
Yeah, man, so to the news, there's the Morbius trailer, which is the Sony Marvel Cinematic Avenue universe, like its own little cul-de-sac off of the main Marvel Universe highway.
It's definitely a cul-de-sac.
It's a weird cul-de-sac because there was the Venom film that came out, and then the Spider-Man folks were like, it is still part of the Marvel Universe, but not really. And then this trailer has Morbius, no Spider-Man-related stuff, and at the end, it's apparently got Michael Keaton potentially being the Vulture, potentially being Birdman. We don't know that.
Potentially, I guarantee Well, I don't guarantee because I haven't got a clue. I can't be knocking out guarantees. I bet that vulture sequence is either not in the film, it won't end up in the final cut,
right?
Or it will be in the film, and it will be just that and at that length.
Yeah, and it won't have anything to do with the.
And it won't have anything to do with that. It'll just be someone going, "Oh, that's a knowing wink, wink, wink."
Winks.
So no,
I like unknowing winks. What am I doing?
They're much more. they're much more.
Yeah.
There's also a bit of like Spider-Man graffiti in there. There's a bit where Morbius is like walking or running down the street, and there's a bit of Spider-Man graffiti, and I think it says "murderer" spray painted over him. What's strange is that the Marvel the Spider-Man image looks like it's in the Sam Raimi costume,
okay.
And it's like a weird sort of like render, which doesn't look like it's from any of the films. Hmm. Very strange choice to put in there. I wonder if it was there on set or whether it was kind of added in post. Very strange. But yeah, this looks pretty much exactly the same vibe as Venom, to the point where I'm pretty sure the font for the title is exactly the same.
Mm.
Even the same, it's made of the same chrome
stuff.
Morbius, I mean, is a great character, fascinating character. Loved him in the comics, loved him in the animated series. But is it a bit too left field for the general audience?
I mean, it's just a sort of a Dracula story, isn't it? So it can't be too far. I mean, do you remember in the cartoon he didn't bite people, and he didn't feed on blood, he fed on plasma, and he had like little suckers on his hands.
Yeah, I do remember that. I remember there's an episode where Blade's trying to kill him, isn't there,
with a laser sword.
I mean that'd be cool. Imagine we
and
got
a
like
motorbike that
I mean,
rides up walls.
Yeah. I mean, if we got like Blade introduced into the MCU, and I know Morbius was Sony, but you know, just forget that for a moment. If you got a film with like Blade and Morbius going head to head, and Spider-Man's involved, I mean, can you just imagine?
I love the Spider-Man animated TV show. You know the one that goes wow, 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 wow. It's like the wow panel.
Spider-Man.
It's Joe Perry who wrote that song, who did the theme tune.
Is it?
Yeah. Apparently, he did a few animated theme tunes.
X-Men. That's a good one. That's probably the best one.
No, you know, that is good. But I kind of prefer the Spider-Man one. Okay.
I mean, they're both. Let's just admit they're both fucking good. This film looks kind of crappy, cruddy. It kind of looks pretty much the same as Venom, but a bit more serious, because Venom had a little bit of a sort of funny streak running through it. Jared Leto, like, I don't know. I do like him, but. I don't know. I'm not too hyped for it. I kind of feel like, yeah, there's a couple of shots where we see Morbius in his full vampy form, and he looks kind of scary. But you know, how gory can it get?
Yeah. The special effects. It's the same. The sort of must be the same studio effects house that did the Venom stuff. It's like that overly CGI stuff that I just can't.
It looks to be like exactly the same as Venom. It's like, you know, anti-hero is a good guy, but look, he's kind of a bad guy, but he's got a moral code. But look, he's doing an experiment on himself. It was another experiment in a lab.
Yeah. You think they're trying to build up to a Sinister Six type film without Spider-Man in it? So possibly, Venom, Morbius, whoever, I don't know, who else?
Matt Smith is in this as well, isn't he? Doctor Who guy. Is his name Matt Smith? Something?
Yeah.
I guarantee we'll get some sort of fight between Leto and Matt Smith, where Matt Smith is some sort of vampire thing and Morbius is in his full vampire form, and they'll go one-on-one in some sort of shiny CGI.
Yeah, it'd be that effect. It's like with coloured ink in milk. Do you know what I mean? Like they sort of drop it in and it's like...
Yeah.
And it would just be that flurries of that kind of wafting around each other. It'd be like watching two coloured farts have a scrap.
Yeah. That might be the best description we could have hoped for. Yeah. I want it to be good. I like Morbius. I wanted Venom to be good. Didn't like it at all. So, you know, someone needs to get a grip on what these series of films are going to be.
Yeah.
For God's sake.
The other trailer that I haven't watched, because I'll probably just go and see it anyway, is the Fantasy Island one. Andy shared it in the Facebook group.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what the TV show was. I never watched it, I don't think. Is it sort of round a twist sort of thing?
I don't know if I'd explain it. So apparently this one is only PG-13, this new version. So it's not like, it's sort of like a fantasy drama series, wouldn't it?
You know that thing that goes Peggy 18.
Peggy 18.
Does he just not know how to pronounce PG? And why is he saying
I don't know. I think it's something to do with something. It was, I don't know, it confused me. But yeah, apparently it is only Peggy 18. Pan-European game information, it means.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
You believe me. Yeah. So yeah, I haven't watched this trailer ever, but I probably will because I like a trailer. Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard some stuff about it. So yeah, PG-13 horror elements. Why not? I'm probably not in a good position to say anything other than that because I don't really know what I'm dealing with. Sorry, mate.
No, yeah, go on.
There were some more game trailers this week. So we saw another Resident Evil 3 trailer, one that focused on Nemesis a little bit more, gave us a little bit of what the gameplay may look like. It seems that Nemesis has got a rocket launcher. He's got a flamethrower. Fire launcher.
And a bullet launcher.
And a bullet launcher, and he can grab you from afar with his tentacly arms.
Ooh, all right.
So this looks pretty good.
Is this the same POV as Resident Evil 2 Remake? And again, for the same
Yeah, so I mean, okay. It looks pretty much exactly the same. I think it's like the same engine. It's obviously a lot of Raccoon City they had already rendered in Resident Evil 2, so we're going to get some of that, I guess, in Resident Evil 3, and also like loads of more new areas. But yeah, I'm so hyped for this. I played a bit of Resident Evil 3 on PS1 just a couple of weeks ago just to remember how good, and Nemesis is a lovely constant threat. So yeah. It'd be great to see how it transpires to PS4. And then we did also get a trailer for Doom Eternal with some more gameplay. Seen a lot more demons and beasties, and it looks suitably insane as the previous release was, but it's coming out in March. So, a few things that were going to come out around about that time. So, like Cyberpunk 2077 has been delayed. So, a little bit more time to play Doom in March, play Resident Evil 3 in April, and then wait a few months. Play lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got too many games to play. There's far too many on my like digital shelf that I need to play.
And the only other thing I wanted to talk about really was the Oscars and the Oscar nominations, and how obviously horror has been overlooked in a year where we've had Us and Midsommar and you know, a lot of other really good films. It's strange to see. Obviously, I wouldn't expect some of these films to get nominated in major categories, but the fact that like they've received little to no. Nominations at all. I know Lupita Nyong'o's performance in Us has been sort of quoted a lot as saying that could have been a potentially nominated performance. But then in a lot of the other award categories, so stuff like the Golden Globes and everything, like these films have been overlooked as well. So I wasn't expecting the Oscars to overlook it. I did see an interesting headline the other day which said, in regards to the Joker, it said, Are the Oscars finally overlooking their comic book bias in the awards? And I thought, well, they've been doing that for a long time. Black Panther got nominated last year, Spider-Verse won.
Anything to get the clicks on there.
So what I'm going to put to you is, should that story be changed for horror? Is there an anti-horror bias towards... I'm not going to limit it to just the Academy Awards. I'm going to limit it to a lot of the mainstream awards. I know we mentioned it briefly last week.
Anti-genre, isn't it, really? I mean, it's the same with any sort of higher brow sort of awards thing in literary fiction or in cinema. Anything that's got the sort of a genre tag to it, horror, sci-fi,
shoot-em-ups,
action. Yeah. It's only in games where they enjoy more genre-based stuff, I imagine. I don't know. I'd say yes. Yeah, you're correct. There is a bias.
There's so much like opportunity in this genre. I'm speaking about horror specifically here, for like performances that are absolutely insane and take so many risks and are completely different. Like just discussing Lupita Nyong'o's performance, the fact that she's playing two different characters in a completely different way. That was, I mean, I don't think Us was a perfect film, but I think her performance stood out in that way. And it seems like in non-genre films, in order to get a Best Acting nomination, you kind of just have to be a bit... How can I put this without sounding like I'm completely slating everybody? I don't know. Like, you kind of just have to be... Like, the fact, for example, Margot Robbie got nominated for Bombshell, which I watched last week. And she's just being an actress. She's just being Margot Robbie in that. You know, there's nothing that stands out as me going, Jesus, wow, that was a great performance.
Okay. Well, that one, that does make me think a bit.
In terms of performances, I think there are things like in horror and in genre films where you've really got to step out of your comfort zone in order to deliver a memorable performance.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I mean, I'm thinking of Natalie Portman won an Oscar for Black Swan.
Of course.
That
but
is...
ideally, you wouldn't say that was... I mean, yes, psychological...
Yeah, it kind of bridges the line. It has a foot in the not horror genre enough for people to go, that's just see it as a good performance. That Margot Robbie thing with Bombshell, I've not seen it, but I'm making assumptions here. I just don't imagine it'd be that good.
Yeah, I'm not trying to slate these award ceremonies, because Jordan Peele won Best Original Screenplay for Get Out, great, but only six movies have been nominated, or that you could categorize as horror, have been nominated for Best Picture in 90 years of the Oscars. So that's The Exorcist, Jaws, Silence of the Lambs, Sixth Sense, and Black Swan.
They're good films.
They're all right, aren't they?
Yeah.
And if you'd like to listen back to episodes, we've actually done episodes on The Exorcist, Jaws, and Black Swan.
What was the other one you said there?
Silence of the Lambs and Sixth Sense.
Oh, not the nose. Yeah, you're right. We should do podcasts on those episodes.
Yeah, but I was just wondering what listeners thought in regards to this thing, whether they think you can see it changing, whether the bloody horror genre is always going to be the little picked on kid in class, never going to get what he deserves.
Yeah, do you feel like that kind of that outsidership lures certain types of people into the genre, though? Like,
yeah,
it's the same like metal music or sort of indie genre fiction. Like, it attracts a certain type of person who likes the fact that it's not mainstream.
Yeah, I agree. It's just nice. Sometimes it's nice to, for certain things you like, to get recognition on the big stage. But you know,
you want stuff that you like to be liked by other people. Yeah.
No, I liked it first. You like it, I liked it first, I like
and
it
then
more
when
than
everyone
you.
Else likes it, you're like, nah, it's not that good actually. I like this other thing.
Yeah. I remember feeling like that about quite a lot of bands and musicians. What's that? Awful.
Muse. First few albums were good, and then
Muse. I remember seeing Ed Sheeran in Bristol, and I had no idea who he was, and he headlined like Dot to Dot Festival, maybe like 2011 or 2012.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, he's pretty cool. Now, Jesus.
Why?
I'm just that guy. Well, you like it, do you? Well, look at all his songs he's got. That's for a different, completely different podcast episode. The horror of mainstream music.
I don't think there is a thing, is there? Is a horror film that sold out? Horror director that sold out? I don't think that happens. Well, I guess it's like the horror directors making comic book movies. James Wan making Aquaman. David Sandberg making Shazam.
In regards to comic book movies, I thought maybe we should also talk about the Doctor Strange sequel as well, because we heard it was going to be a little bit horror tinged with Multiverse of Madness. I think we even discussed this fairly recently, didn't we? But only a few, Scott Derrickson and the screenwriter have left. Citing creative differences. What do you think that means for the future of this film? Do you think it's going to even be that scary? There's probably going to be like a couple of sequences where it's like, oh yeah, great. who are they going to get in as well? Because, you know,
it was very
upsetting when Edgar Wright left Ant-Man, wasn't it?
It was more upsetting because I enjoyed the Ant-Man film, but and I could see all of the Edgar Wright-isms in there, but they weren't. Yep. Polished
Edgar
to the
Wright.
They weren't Edgar Wright enough. Like, he could have, I understood. I saw all the bits where I imagined Joe Cornish and Edgar Wright wrote those moments. But it just felt like they didn't quite push it all the way into
Joe
that.
Cornish as well. I completely forgot Joe Cornish was involved in that. I mean, it's super disappointing because you think, why hire something like that if you don't want it to be like the kind of films they make?
Well, they hired them quite early on, I think. And before Scott Pilgrim, and which was a massive failure, comic book movie failure, but like financially. So I imagine that pretty came out and they were like, you can't have full, like, we have to rein you back in a little bit because obviously you can't sell a huge movie like this. I don't know. But I mean, Edgar Wright is going to be fine. I mean, people know him as a tried and tested director now. Joe Cornish, I think, is probably a little bit more on a precarious position because the kid who would be king didn't do too well, I don't think. So
he directed that, right?
Yeah, wrote and directed it, and Attack the Block was fantastic, but I don't think it's quite got the accolades or cultism that Hot Fuzz or Shaun the Dead or what even World's End have got. Yeah, I know. It's an interesting one, and Joe Cornish is great. He's a really great, witty, cool person. So I want him to make more stuff.
Yeah, he'll be all right. Yeah. Sure. Have you watched anything this week of note?
Yeah, I finished Preacher Season 2. Have you seen Preacher Season 2 at all?
Not Season 2. I saw a couple of episodes of the first series, and it's something that I would like to go back to.
Yeah, I think the first half of Season 2 really hits the tone of what Preacher should be. It's insane, really bloody, really gory. There's some, like, really kind of the Saint of Killers character, who's this cowboy from hell who's hunting him all down, really has a slasher vibe to him. And they really nail that.
Okay.
But then, like, it seems like the second half, they start to play with what the characters should be. Some of it works, but then they take a lot of the bite out of the Satan Killers. They're trying to give him some sort of humanity, and I'm like, he doesn't need any of that. He's a slasher character. He's an elemental force. He shouldn't be reasoned with in any way. I don't know. It's weird, but it is a great season. It's a great show. It's not like Watchmen level of TV, but it is a fun time. And Joseph Gilgan's great all the way through.
Oh yeah, always. Is that it? All you've seen, really?
I think so. I don't think I've seen all that much. I need to go to the cinema to see 1917 soon. I need to go watch some horror movies as well.
Yeah, I've got a couple of horror movies down. I don't know how good it's going to be, but I've got hold of that Countdown, and from watching the trailer, I was like, that looks terrible, but yeah. I know that I'll watch it just so I can hate it if it is terrible. I've heard the Grudge remake has not been getting very good reviews at all. Apparently it's a complete cop out, I've heard.
Well, everyone said that about, well, everyone didn't like Wounds, including you, and I liked it.
Everyone said that about Wounds, didn't they? And that turned out to be, I didn't like it. I did watch the first two episodes of the Stephen King HBO adaptation of The Outsider.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have you read that book?
Yeah, yeah. It's good.
Yeah. So it's like, basically, it's such a great adaptation of the book. The first two episodes take, and it's almost exactly the same pacing as the book. One of those things, when you watch it and you go, this is kind of how I imagined it. Or it feels.
Does episode one end with that dude? Careful. No spoilers. That guy.
It ends with a moment you wouldn't expect. Episode two starts with a moment you wouldn't expect, if you remember right. A particular thing happens that you wouldn't expect. Anyway,
I would have thought that would have been episode one, but okay.
It's really well done. Ben Mendelsohn, Jason Bateman, who else?
The Bateman.
We haven't seen the character Holly from Mr. Mercedes, not Mr. Mercedes, Finders Keepers yet.
I haven't seen the Mr. Mercedes TV show. Is the Holly character in that?
So the Harley character is in that, I believe. Not the same actress.
Oh. Okay.
So this actress is played by the one who's just been nominated for to be to be best actress. Cynthia Erivo, that's it. So she's just been nominated for the best actress Oscar for Harriet, and she's going to play Holly. So she hasn't appeared in the show yet after two episodes, but I'm sure she will soon. But yeah, it's a really good Stephen King tinged miniseries, you know, just like a murder mystery with possibly a supernatural twist. Yeah, I really like it. And the only other thing I've watched is what you mentioned, 1917, which I saw yesterday, which is pretty amazing. The fact it's shot to look like it's one long continuous take is really it's great to watch. It feels like you're watching.
I love one long continuous take.
Masterpiece.
God of War.
Yeah, you can Birdman, of course. Yeah, you can kind of work out where the cuts may be.
Yeah,
and that's kind of like, but you don't get taken out of it by thinking, where are the bloody cuts? Come on.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel like that's a gimmick, you know, and it didn't feel like that with Birdman either, but. It doesn't feel like that's a gimmick, I
love Birdman. Okay, and I love God of War, so I'm sure I love this, and I love war. So anything else you've seen, man? You've been on it. Okay, I'll check out The Outsider.
Definitely.
I've been reading a lot of comics. Actually, I'll tell you that been reading a lot of Grant Morrison comics, who I've never really got into. Back in the day, I was reading a lot of Alan Moore, Neil Gaiman, Peter Milligan, all these guys, but I never got into Grant Morrison. I don't know why. And Duncan at work lent me a copy of Nameless, which is his horror comic. It's a single graphic novel volume, probably about 8 issues or something like that. Nameless, and it's basically Event Horizon with some tarot occultism style influence in there as well. And
I recognize that cover.
It's a great cover. And it's fantastically confusing and weird and great. It's such a it's a bit of a mindfuck, but in the best way. It's Lovecraftian, and it, like they, astronauts go to it's Xibalba. It's the Mayan underworld, and it's this big asteroid. If they go to it in a spaceship, and they've got like a Steve Jobs sort of character, an occult detective sort of guy. All these various characters who come together, and they're, you know, go into this Xibalba prison for some ancient cosmic deities, and they're going to go in there and find out what's going on, and then all it gets very Event Horizon-y in the sense of, like, there's like flash panels of utter gross grotesquery. Like, you can just hear the screams as you see the panel, you know what I mean? Like, it's like a flash of color and a
Is this just a one-off, pretty much? Just like one volume?
Yeah, they won't be able to do any more. If you read any Grant Morrison before, and I've read a lot now, I'm beginning to understand what his style is, which is kind of you don't understand on the first read of what the hell is going on in the last few pages. You have to go back and read things through and pick up little clues and go on Reddit and read. You know, interpretations and stuff, which is, I think you're into that kind of thing. But yes, I was, because there's loads of tarot cards, and you're like, what does that mean? Is that linked to this and that? It's now one of my favorite graphic novels. So there is that.
Just from looking at some bits now, it looks right on my street. So it may have to be something I check out at some point.
Yeah, man. And that's it. So other than that, it was tonight's movie of choice, which is In Fabric.
Yes.
Have you got any information about it?
Fabric. So, yes, I do. So, In Fabric is a 2018 British horror comedy film written and directed by Peter Strickland, stars Marianne Jean-Baptiste, Hayley Squires, Leo Bill, and Gwendolyn Christie. In Fabric is a haunting ghost story set against the backdrop of a busy winter sales period in a department store, and follows the life of a cursed dress as it passes from person to person with devastating consequences. Cursed dress or cursed dress?
Cursed dress.
That cursed dress.
I did not know it was billed as a comedy, horror comedy. I did not read it as such when watching it. I don't understand.
It's on Wikipedia.
Yeah, okay.
It's on Wikipedia, though, so, you know, I think sometimes...
I was picking up some comedy vibes. Horror comedy. I was picking up some comedy vibes, but at the same time, I was like, it's still a horror movie, but if it sort of identifies as a comedy, I can probably enjoy it a bit more. I don't know. Yeah, it's a strange one. Okay, Rotten Tomatoes, 94% critics reviews, 94% audience, 50%. Letterboxd, 3.4, 6.3 on IMDb. Users are kind of not too keen. Critics are, I guess. It's a strange one. Definitely a strange one.
Really, really strange. And initially I was really unsure, but I think come the end, I was totally sold by it. But the fact that, you know, certain elements of the story we don't really find out all that much about, and certain things about certain characters we don't find out that much about, the mystery sort of stays there. And, you know, essentially a film about a killer dress could be totally ridiculous, but there's something about this film that I find really, really sort of enchanting. Maybe just because it was so strange. I was getting a lot of different vibes from... It's almost like set in a time period. I'm like, when is this set? Initially, I was like, well, it's set in like the 80s or something. And then I'm like, actually, no, it's modern day. Wait a minute. No, it can be because of this. So it's got, it's a very strange sort of vibe. I was getting a lot of weird vibes from it. It reminded me of quite a lot of different films. Ben Wheatley vibes, 100%. So he is, I believe, a producer on this film. It's Ben Wheatley
by,
vibes.
Rook Films, isn't it? That's his production company.
Yeah. So yeah, I was getting Ben Wheatley vibes the whole way through, and obviously, especially considering last week's episode when we discussed Kill List as our top horror film of last decade. So, yeah, something about his style just really appeals to me. Not so much in some of his most recent offerings, but I know it's not his style. Sorry, I know it's Peter Strickland's style, but the fact that I could sort of understand that style in it.
Have you seen Peter Strickland's other movies like Barbarian Sound Studio or...
I haven't, no, and I was looking a bit more into them just to see. So Barbarian Sound Studio and The Duke of Burgundy, is that another one?
Yeah, I haven't seen any of it. This is my first Peter Strickland movie, strictly speaking.
Strickland speaking.
So it's, you're right, so the time period is a bit of a sort of unmoors you from what you know right from the get-go. It's about a woman who...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Down look, I guess. Gets a dress, and it's got lots of European arts horror vibes to it. Lots of like the sound effects reminded me of The Innocents. You know, I mean, it's just like they have that sort of plate delay echo sound where it's like a thing, and they have like a wah, 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 sort of like a following like a delay noise.
There was something very like Italian horror about it. A lot of Suspiria vibes.
Yeah,
especially with some of the colors.
I was thinking, yeah, in particular the guy, it went sort of the Suspiria thing with the, like, the witches, and then there's that guy who, like, his face appears in, like, glass and stuff. Yeah,
there are some genuinely, like, I don't know if they're meant to be hilarious, but there are some bits where I was like,
there
was really
a really hilarious
up.
Bit actually. Yeah, yeah.
I think because I was, because yeah. I watched this with my girlfriend, and we were kind of like, obviously, like, making jokes throughout.
Yeah.
But still enjoying the film and taking it seriously. But there was a certain few scenes where we were just cracking up, laughing, just thinking, yeah. What on earth is going on? We'll get into that, obviously. But I enjoyed it, not just for the fact that I enjoyed the style of the film and the content of the film, but there were the moments that really tickled me, kind of like added to it for me. Yeah. Didn't, you know, sometimes when you find bits funny in a horror film, it kind of takes away from it and you don't take it so seriously, but I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think I really kind of enjoyed the first sort of half, and then I started to grow a bit weary of it.
I think the first half is incredibly strong, and I think when it kind of like switches the POV, I get it. When it switches the main protagonist, and I don't necessarily feel like we get, I wasn't satisfied by the conclusion of what happened to the first protagonist.
Mm.
And by the time we get our second protagonist, I still enjoyed it. I just wasn't as invested in him as I was in Marianne Jean-Baptiste.
It's kind of like, kind of goes from the main protagonist who is played by Marianne Jean-Baptiste. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
She's been in a few things that we've sort of watched recently, right? So
what else?
So she was in, maybe I'm imagining it actually. I thought she was in something we'd seen recently. Maybe I've got it wrong.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think maybe I've got it wrong.
Okay, carry on. Sheila Whitchapel, she's our main protagonist for the first half of the movie. She's down on her luck, single mother, still has hopes to get back with her husband, I believe. She works as a bank teller in a company that seems to constantly pick up on anything that she does slightly wrong, and focuses on that, doesn't focus on anything she does right.
Oh, man. But we've all had a job like that, haven't we?
We have, yeah.
And so her bosses,
yeah.
Her bosses, Stash and Clive, are played by Julian Barrett of the Mighty Boosh, and Steve Oram, who is in a few Ben Wheatley films, isn't he? He's in Sightseers.
He was in a film... I think he wrote and directed a film that was produced by Rook Films as well. They're a great little duo. I think Julian Barrett. Julian Barrett's just great. I don't know, some way he's not in more things. Like, he plays this note perfect.
Think he's got he's got some weird veneers on as well, doesn't he?
Yeah,
in his mouth, and just makes him a little bit more. Yeah, so they sort of pick up on a lot of things that Sheila does, sort of like clock it, go into the toilet. Not having a good enough handshake.
They constantly say, like, Pete is flagged with us. They never really say who this Pete guy is. So Pete, just in case Pete sees, like, this random person who no one knows.
And they keep referring to lunchtime as feeding time.
Yeah.
before we go out for feeding time, we notice you've taken the toilet break, which is a little bit longer than perhaps anybody else, and someone else has picked up on it.
Yeah, it's weird. There's sort of managers who think that by being your friend, they're going to manage you better. Like, that's the end goal of being your friend, not being the friend. Great little combat. I like later on as well, we'll go into the washing machine stuff, but there's some weird stuff going on there as well. Sheila, she's got a son who lives at home. He's an artist, and he is going out with... I sort of recognize this woman, but she's an older... Not older, older, but... older than him, a girl who's a bit of a femme fatale, I think she had a cause at one point.
This is like one of the weirdest roles. This was really, it was just so strange. It was Gwendolyn Christie, isn't it? So it's Gwendolyn Christie of Game of Thrones and Captain Phasma in Star Wars.
I didn't even recognize her.
No, and she is almost unrecognizable, because, you know, you usually see her with that like cropped blonde hair.
Yeah.
But she's sort of like got this shoulder length black bob, and she's like, so if you say that Derek, not Derek, what's his name? His son?
Vince.
Vince. Where did I get Derek from? So Vince, his girlfriend, and her name's Gwen as well.
Yeah.
So she's sort of like the, if he's an artist, and she's sort of like his muse.
Yeah.
Where she's like posing for pictures, and you know they're getting up to various sexual hijinks, and it's a bit. And Sheila doesn't really like living in the same house as them because, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Let's be down. Look, her husband, her ex-husband, she's found out is dating again. So
yeah.
She plans to treat herself. Lots of shots randomly of magazine cutouts that kind of move in weird animated ways. Lens flares and mannequin dolls. Lots of adverts on TV. Just
some really weird, mannequins. Like really bizarre adverts with like creepy mannequins and creepy. I mean, the people who work in this department store called Dentley and Soper are just like, what did you say they were? They're like goth alien. They're, you know what I mean? They didn't yeah. Fashionistas like Romanians or something. They're all like Eastern European, all dressed in black, huge hair, and they don't behave and they don't talk like human beings.
They remind me a lot of the Suspiria dance school teachers.
Yeah. Yeah, so there is a character called Miss Luckmore, played by Fatma Mohammed, who is the sort of, well, like, I don't think she's the main one, but she's the one who serves Sheila and helps her pick out this dress. And she doesn't actually say, there's not one coherent sentence comes out of her mouth.
Yeah,
she speaks in riddle and rhyme and just is very bizarre.
Yeah. She sells Sheila's dress. Do we get any of the kind of... The timeline of this film is pretty insane. Do we get any kind of the weird stuff? There's like her... She just climbed in a dumbwaiter at one point for no apparent reason. She just gets in a dumbwaiter.
Miss Luckmore, yeah. She takes her wig off. She's completely bald underneath. She's got a perfectly smooth dome.
Yeah. And then climbs in a dumbwaiter and rides it down. We don't really know why. There's also a bit where they're doing some sort of witchcraftery on a mannequin. They're kind of massaging it. And then it's bleeding from its... weirdly, it's got pubes. And then there's like a... As they're massaging it, the guy who's a sort of a villain...
Remember, he's like the man in...
Yeah. He's a weird-looking, gaunt... faux Christopher Lee Hammer horror sort of looking guy, and he's hiding, looking, his face suddenly appears. That's a very Euro art horror type thing, to have a face appear in glass, and he's like peering in, and he's obviously like pleasuring himself as they're massaging the mannequin. Yeah. What gave that away
that he was pleasuring himself? Was it the slow motion jizz flying across the screen?
That was like yogurt or something. It wasn't. It was like paint. Yeah.
So they're doing it's like some sort of witchcraft, some sort of odd. They kind of treat the mannequins in the store as if like they're, you know, alive, because they kind of like protect them and do various things. It is very, very strange. So Sheila goes on a date with her red dress. So she's like, she's frequenting like the Lonely Hearts things. They're leaving messages for her. There was quite an interesting little thing. So we hear her answer my phone. We hear her answer machine message like a few times throughout the film. And as things get progressively, you know, worse for her, her answer machine message gets more and more distressed. Did you notice that?
I didn't notice that. That's an interesting detail there.
Very interesting. Yeah. So the first time it's just like chirpy. Second time it's kind of a little bit, third time she's like almost in tears. Well, I love that. I thought that was a great sort of little thing. Yeah. She goes on a date with Adonis, who's basically like a personality vacuum, right?
Yeah. He only answers in like yes and no's. Do you like fun? Yes. You can't get a conversation going with him.
No. And he gives her like a rose that like he's squashed.
Also, the witchy people said Adonis will compliment you in this dress, but he never does. And then later on, when things are going to shit, one of them says to her, "He did compliment you, didn't he?" As if like that, as if she he'd broken the spell or something by not complimenting her in the dress. Yeah, it's weird.
There's quite a few mentions of compliments. There's quite a few mentions of you will get compliments and did you get compliments? Like they love a compliment. Like they deal in
compliments. Everyone does, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so after wearing the dress as well, she notices this like weird rash on her chest, which kind of looks like like a possible STD. But there's talk of, you know, oh, maybe it's the washing powder. Oh, maybe it's this. But she puts the dress in the washing machine while she's playing a really tense game of Ludo with Gwen and Vince, where Gwen like knocks her piece off the board and there's like, they're really, really angry about it. Vince is like, don't, please.
Yeah.
She knocks a piece off the board and, But then the washing machine goes that utterly apeshit, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't know why.
So with the dress, it must be a curse on the dress, but the washing machine basically rips itself away from the wall.
The dress can't
be
washed.
She tries to unplug it.
Yeah.
Can't be washed, mate. Can't be washed. And then the washing machine like sort of cuts her arm as well, doesn't it? And it looks pretty gruesome.
See, I was well into it around this point, this film. I was like,
yeah.
I don't know, there's something kind of weird about it and it's still kind of horrifying, but then the horrifying elements seem to dissipate, which is fine, I guess that's what the film's going for, but I kind of wanted it to keep the horrifying element to it a bit more.
All I kept thinking is how do you film like a washing machine going apeshit?
Yeah,
what do you even do
and have people
put rocks in it?
Yeah, well that's what I was thinking. Like, you seen like the videos we put bricks in them and stuff. Yeah, it's weird because it looked like it was like dangerous and they were kind of trying to hold it down and stuff and it's pulling tiles off the wall.
If you've got like any fear about your washing machine breaking, don't watch this film because there's at least three different machines that just get murked.
And there's a washer machine repairman as well. It's an interesting choice thematically to have washing machines so prevalent throughout the film. So what happens? So the dress kind of goes to strangle Gwen at one point that night, even maybe. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's that. It might be that night. Yeah. So I think Gwen and Vince are having sex, and there's a moment where the dress like appears above them, like floating above them.
Yeah.
Like this, and then it sort of like goes right down onto Gwen's face, and she sort of screams. It was like trying to suffocate her, but then it like slinks out the room. There's a lot of bits where like the dress is like slinking across the floor, and I just imagine someone with a string pulling it along.
Yeah,
this is scary.
Sheila goes on a date with another guy at some point. There's more creepy trailers, I think. There's more creepiness magazine stuff happening. I think she goes. Tries to take the dress back at one point, but they won't take it.
I think she tries to take... Doesn't she try to take the dress back after date? So she meets a new guy, this guy called Zach. Yeah. He's much more interesting, and they go on a nicer date, and then she introduces him to Vince. Then he stays over, I think, but then they go out on a walk, and like a dog attacks Sheila.
Yeah.
And like... Rips the dress up, but then later on, Vince points out that the dress is fine. And she's like, no, it was ripped to shreds. It definitely got ripped to shreds. Yeah. Dress is fine. Turns out the dress is invincible.
It's like Wolverine. Made of Wolverines.
Made of Wolverine adamantium.
Okay, so when she takes the dress to return it, there's a bit with the man like wrestling a woman in the shop.
Yeah.
Like it's just a weird little cutaway and he's like got her in like an arm bar or something.
It's like she's a shoplifter or something, but it just pins her down.
Yeah.
And, So is it around about now we kind of find out that this dress, we find out that the person who modeled this dress in the catalogue was killed?
Yeah, yeah. It's just
is that what you find out about?
I think so, yeah. And then not long after that, we get maybe the most shocking part of the film where Sheila's driving and then the dress appears in the middle of the road.
So she's driving to take, so she tries to take the dress back and they sort of say don't want it. Then she tries to take the dress to a charity shop, but while she's driving there, there's like store mannequins on the road.
Right.
And
yeah.
Then there's a store mannequin in the middle of the road and she crashes her car. and it's when she crashes her car that we see the dress floating above the car watching.
And she's got like
I would have just smashed through those mannequins.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have tried to stop at any point. It's just a bloody mannequin, mate.
It's got like a giant hole in her side. And she dies in the middle of the road. Yeah, so I wasn't expecting her to die, I'll be honest. But then I quite like the setup of the next story.
It's a really good setup, yeah. It's a really unique way for us to get the dress to another person who perhaps is an unknowing recipient of a haunted dress.
Yeah. So it's a guy...
It does seem to skip in time. It does feel like we're in modern day now.
Especially with the nature of the people here now. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
The aesthetic of the one before was like maybe 80s, maybe late 80s, maybe early 90s. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But the aesthetic of this is like it's the 2000s or at the very least, you know, 2010-ish. But we're never told.
Yeah. There's a guy who's gone on his stag do, and then as a lark, all these other people like the father-in-law and stuff, they buy him this red dress from a charity shop and he forces him to wear it, so he gets absolutely laddered and passes out outside a kebab shop and like vomits up.
Guts all over the place, isn't there?
Yeah. We've all been there.
How do you feel about that? Stag do, get him in a bloody dress, mate. Come on, how you really humiliate him. I feel like, all right,
very English. When I think about like English culture, that's up there. Like getting someone absolutely hammered and making him
ill. It's almost like, it's like they just want to emasculate you as much as possible.
Yeah.
They just want to go, you want to get punished. It's your stag do, is it? You're going to get married. We want to humiliate you.
Like tying people up naked to a lamppost and stuff and in Amsterdam. Massaging
any stag do's I've been on, I feel like the stag has always been treated like royalty. I mean, they've got nice and drunk, but they've always kind of been like it's a big celebration. I feel like let's push him in a freezing cold lake.
Yeah, let's potentially kill him just before he gets married. You can't have anything good in your life. Yeah.
So
it's interesting.
So this guy with the dress, his name is Reg Speaks. He's a washing machine repairman. I recognize him from like bit parts and stuff. His name's Leo Bill.
Commercials and stuff, I reckon, as well.
Adverts and stuff. Yeah, definitely.
So nothing happens when he's out and on the lash. The next morning, he wakes up. He's got a killer hangover. His wife to be, Babs.
Babs. Yep.
She washes it. I think she tries it on. They both get the same mark on their chest as well, exactly the same place.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is when I started to check out a little bit, to be fair, perfectly honest.
Yeah, because I wanted a bit more of Sheila's story and the fact that we quickly switch.
Yeah. The dress kills a bird, I think. There's like a canary bird.
So it kills a bird. He starts getting chastised by his boss for like minor indiscretions again. Like,
well, that's a common theme.
And his boss kind of just stares at him. I think his boss eats his card at one point.
Yeah, his staff ID card. Well,
And it's a weird.
They wash the dress, and it blows up the washing machine again. And him being a washing machine repairman, he goes to fix it himself with the staff tools or something, and the boss doesn't like that. So he gets the can.
You just wouldn't tell anyone, would you? Just do it and not tell anyone that you did it. There we go.
Why does he go to see Stash and...
He goes to see them about getting a loan, I believe.
Right,
so
okay.
I think he pretty much loses his job. Isn't that right?
Yeah, he's fired. Yeah.
He gets fired from that job. Yeah, so he's basically... He's got a weird thing where when he reads out washing machine faults...
Yeah.
People go into like a weird trance where they're kind of like, it seems like they're enjoying it. It's a bit like ASMR, where they're sort of getting those tingles and they're going, oh yeah. Well, he's talking to a woman at one point who I thought was going to try and seduce him, but
no. That was a weird moment. And he explains his dream. Both Stash and Steve Oram, whatever his character's name is, and Sheila explained a dream to them, and now this guy is explaining a dream to them. They seem to always sort of want to know about people's dreams. He dreams that
they call it a sleeping dream as well, don't they? They go, "I had a sleeping dream."
Yeah, So they, his dream is that Babs, his wife, gives birth to a little baby wearing the red dress, and he's outside. He's screaming, but he's outside. Oh, yeah, he's screaming because he thinks that's what she wants to hear or something. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah.
And the people who are around when she's giving birth, so like the doctors and stuff, are the people from the department store.
Yeah, yeah.
There's another weird thing. Sorry to go back to the department store, but there's another weird thing where, like, people come in, they all queue outside, and it seems like it's happened in the middle of the night, where people queue outside and they all rush in when the store opens. And
they're, like, doing, like, a spell dancing inside.
They do this weird sort of spell dance where they're kind of like gesturing for people to come in with these weird hand movements. Yeah, I mean, it is very, very odd, isn't it?
Yeah, and it only gets odder, I think, around here. So Babs takes to wearing the dress, or she goes to the store, and around this time...
So Miss Lutmore, like, just basically tells her to leave. She obviously sees that she's got the dress on.
Yeah.
And she basically says, right, you've got to leave because if you go away and you come back wearing a different dress, that's fine. But she demands she leaves, basically. And at the same time, Reg is at home watching these weird adverts on TV again. And he's slowly getting carbon monoxide poisoned, because there was a moment earlier where the dress gets, like, put on top of the boiler, and then we see a flame change color. So obviously very weird. And then Babs has a moment where she's talking to Miss Lutmore about another dream she had, where she's in the catalogue with all the dresses, and she's getting thinner and thinner as the dresses get larger and larger, and she turns into, like, a skeleton. So
and then it's around then that a fight breaks out in the department store, and, like, chaos.
That's really weird.
Yeah. Chaos strikes.
Two people get, like, into a disagreement, don't they, about who was next in the queue.
Yeah. And then they shove each other, and then they push each other, and then suddenly one of them, like, punches one in the face, and it just escalates from there. I don't know why everyone else starts to get involved as well.
I think it's just one of those, a fight, is it? Right, let's do it. Like, if I was there with you, I might just punch you just to get away with it.
Yeah. Bang! Yeah. And then it starts to kick out. Everyone's sort of going crazy. I can't remember what happens to Babs. Oh, she burns to death. Yeah, because
so she basically gets locked in a changing room while there's a fire starts where, you know, something falls on, like, a 2-bar electric fire. See, that, I mean, that is something from the past. There's no way a 2-bar electric fire would be on full blast in a changing room in modern day. That's very strange.
Yeah.
So madness descends, the store's on fire, Miss Lutmore goes upstairs and into that dumb waiter thing and goes down the floors, and then we sort of see Sheila and Reg and Babs, who are obviously all dead.
Yeah, they're, like, weaving the dress.
They're, like, stitching together the dress in Fred.
Yeah, in some sort of limbo hell sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah. They're trapped in eternal servitude to the dress and the store. And then, and the final shot, obviously we see the store destroyed and burnt down, and a fireman finds the dress completely undamaged amongst the rubble, and he thinks, this would be great for my stag do on the weekend.
Yeah, it is a weird film. It's pretty cool, though. Okay, trivia for this was very hard to come by.
Yeah.
I mean, it was almost non-existent. But let's see how you do. Number one, in the catalogue, the colour of the dress is listed as something red. Do you know what kind of red?
Is it something completely weird? Or is it
not that weird, really?
Red?
So, yeah, sort of.
Scarlet red?
A bit weirder than that.
Bit weird than that. Is it something to do with blood?
Yeah.
Blood red.
Yeah, and sort of artery red.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ah.
It's quite a cool little term. So that's about all the trivia, proper trivia questions I could find. Here's some more. Executive produced by someone that rhymes with Ken Creakley.
Ben Wheatley?
Yes, correct.
Does that rhyme?
Half rhyme. Number three. Wait, how many questions do I have left?
This is number three, should be, yeah.
No, I have zero questions left, was the correct answer.
Oh right. Okay, I thought you were genuinely asking me.
Well, that was the setup.
Well,
okay.
So, 10 out of 10 for effort.
Mate, that was you tried for some trivia questions for that film. That was difficult. I thought the Artery Red one was good. The Ken Creakley one was about half.
Pretty good.
Yeah. We need to rate the film.
I kind of thought, and I don't know if you agree with this. So I'll just go back. Miss Luckmore looks so much like the main actress in Suspiria, the original Suspiria.
I was like,
it can't be her because she looks the same age or a little bit older, but she looks so much like what's her name?
She's in the Suspiria remake, isn't she?
Jessica Harper. Yeah.
They must have gone for that, I guess.
I mean,
yeah.
Looking at Jessica Harper as she looks now, no, she doesn't look like her. But in this film, I was like, she looks like very strange.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what gave Suspiria vibes even more so.
Yeah. I am quite interested to hear how you're going to rate this one. I'm not sure how I'm going to rate it.
Well, I really liked it. As I said, it's a very strange one. I like the strange stuff. And it gave me Ben Wheatley vibes, who I love. It gave me Talent Horror vibes, Suspiria vibes. I wasn't a bit completely sold on the second half.
Just a teeny tiny. It's like if Garth Marenghi was made well. Like, not like intentionally.
I think maybe
because
it's got comedy actors in it as well, it feels a bit familiar. It feels distinctly British, even though I said about the Italian horror stuff. It feels very British.
Yeah.
But yeah, even though I wasn't entirely sold on the second half, I think I enjoyed the first half enough that this really did hit home for me. So I'll probably give it a B+, I think.
Cool. Yeah. I was really enjoying the first half, and I kind of felt like it took a dip a little bit. I wasn't keen on the story arc of the Reg character. He just seems to die. Mm-hmm. Although there's lots of stuff in this film to like, though. He just seems to die. It just seems to fizzle out. I don't really know what the point of him was, really. It just seemed like a ploy to have interesting bits about him, about the dream, the washing machine, hypnotism talk. But I don't know if his character had too much of a compared to Sheila. I feel like there was more tragedy, or there was something more to Sheila's story. I thought it was good. I think I always enjoy a weird movie, and I enjoy all the little weird touches and Euro horror touches, and the like you said, the Englishness. I feel quite proud for some reason.
I
take an element of pride in this film, and I'm going to give it a B-. Yeah,
there we go, pretty high. This might be one that kind of grows on me as well, because it might develop into being even more of a favorite. But yeah, I like it. Got some really weird stuff in the soundtrack as well that I've been listening to. So
cool. I need to check that out as well. Yeah. Okay. So next week, did we decide on what we're going to do? I think we had a plan. Underwater.
I think we did have a plan. Yeah, so Underwater is out, but I think that's not out in the UK until, I think, so maybe we've got another episode and then Underwater.
Okay.
So the UK release of Underwater is 23rd of Jan.
Okay.
So it's not out for a week yet. So, I mean, we could do that, or we could do something between now and then. So I guess we'll decide.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in a sec. Right, okay. Thanks for listening. I could do, rewriting these outro bits. Give a bit fresh juice. Become a patron over at patreon.com/HawkandCleaver. Thanks to Kovac Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider subscribing and reviewing and going over to Facebook and joining the Facebook group. Lots of cool people in the group at the minute. Oh, we didn't mention Ben's t-shirt. Other Ben's t-shirt. Ben's
of course.
His... got himself a t-shirt that says did he make it himself, or did he must have had it printed himself, because this t-shirt can't exist outside of
It definitely doesn't exist, Luke. No.
I'm sure it did.
Well, if it did, I'd be completely surprised. But so it says Congo, the 1995 action adventure horror film. That's what it says on the front. And on the back, it says that's a horror film. And obviously, this has pleased Andy Conduit Turner no end.
Yeah.
And I think it's even made us have a conversation where we're saying, well, we kind of got to review it on this podcast now.
Yeah, we've got to. Yeah, because it's a horror film, so we have to. Okay, so thanks to my co-host, Ben, for being a right-hour dude.
Thanks very much, Luke, as always.
We'll see you soon. Bye. Bye. Bye.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.